Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Philip Schumann from ASRAP. So tell me a little bit about sports and recreation for the blind.
Well, ASRAP is an organization. We focus specifically on, as the name would suggest, the sports and recreation for the blind. We do this through two major components. So that is our competitive sport practice, which would be goalball, for example, which is a sport designed specifically for the blind and visually impaired. And then we've got a separate section that focuses specifically on active living. This is more of a lifestyle component, things like walking groups, lawn bowling, and more recreational sports. And that we provide kind of as, like I said, non-competitive component.
So what are some of the major challenges connected to setting up sports and recreation for the visually impaired?
Well, you know, obviously we have to modify the individual sports so they actually meet the individual needs of the people that are playing them. This can be quite complex, but it's actually amazing, and it's something that I've learned more of, that you can modify just about any sport. So I'd say that while we've got challenges, it is actually very entertaining to watch us modify a sport that you would think wouldn't be a good fit for the blind and visually impaired, such as golf or even archery we've done, things that you can still use audible cues and other means of making the sport appropriate. So that's obviously a challenge, but it's something that we have a great deal of fun with. And there's actually quite a bit of literature out there on how you can modify these specific things to make them appropriate.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with ASRAP, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
Success moment. You know, there's so many little success moments, so many things that I wish I could just capture on film, you know, whether it be a 7-year-old boy having a good golf hit. And, you know, that one in particular is fascinating for any golfers out there. You don't need to see where the ball goes to know that you've had a good hit. You can actually just feel how you've connected with the ball. And just to see how that is actually such an instinctive feeling to know that you've connected really well, I find very fascinating. But we've had people go from, you know, to the Paralympics through goalball and come home with medals. We've had, you know, individuals that have achieved weight loss goals and individuals that have increased the quality of their life substantially by partaking in our activities. So there's so many different little things that make it up, but I think the little ones are sometimes a lot more beautiful than the big ones, you know, the small individual and personally satisfying moments are just amazing.
So in terms of myths and stereotypes in the community, if someone were to say this can't be adapted, how do you go about proving that it can be done, that sport can be modified for a person with visual impairment?
Yeah, so we hear that from time to time, and my father is blind, and he gets told certain things all the time, where, you know, whether it be sport or not, that he can't do. And that, of course, has the absolute opposite effect on most people that have a disability or an impairment. So usually, keeping safety in mind, we'll try just about anything. We'll experiment with it. Sometimes it doesn't work, right? Sometimes there's things that could be better, and we could really focus on things that or sports that actually do work. But if somebody wants to try something or if there's an idea out there, then by all means, we'll give it a whirl as long as it's going to be safe. And I think that's an appropriate way to run an organization, whether it's a business or a nonprofit, that you are willing to experiment and you're flexible enough to try new things and to really take bold steps and to make sure that you're doing it in a mindful way, that if it fails, you both learn from the failure and it's not going to cause significant damage to the organization or to any individual person.
So I wanted to ask you about an earlier point. For those in the audience who might not be familiar with goalball, could you give me an overview?
Yeah, so goalball is a competitive sport. It is one of the main Paralympic sports for the blind and visually impaired. Now, it's a game where it's a little bit difficult to describe. You're basically shooting a ball across and trying to get it through the players on the other side, and they are obviously trying to block it from getting through. So there's a lot of listening, a lot of feeling, and then a lot of quick responses to when you hear the ball coming through.
So are there any projects on the horizon for ASREB?
Sorry, just to clarify, project as in?
What are the next steps?
Yeah, I think our next steps, we've got quite a few different next steps that we would like to take. If you talk to the goalball coaches, they, of course, want to take the goalball program to the next step and to be able to make sure that we've got more athletes going Paralympic and actually coming home with medals and even doing well in the Canadian championships and these type things. And then from our standpoint, from my specific standpoint on the active living side, you know, I'm always looking to increase the number of people that are partaking in our organization. You know, for a long time, blind and visually impaired people in every country were people that just sat at home on the couch while everyone else was out enjoying their day-to-day activities, while everyone was working, and they only really got to partake in things when people came home from work. And it's still that way in a lot of countries, for example, Peru and Colombia and these type places, where they haven't fully integrated. We are fortunate that we live in a society where they are integrated, sometimes not fully, but they have the opportunity to integrate. For example, my father runs a small business and has a master's degree, right? And so sports is kind of the next level. It's kind of the where we start getting them into things that are going to not just help them get by in their day-to-day life, you know, make enough money to put enough food on the table, but actually provide a good quality of life and a comfortable way of living. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that that's accessible for everyone. So with that, there's things like accessibility of our programs. There's, you know, where the programs are hosted, how many programs we have, no different than any other organization in that sense, but that would be one of the specific goals, is to make sure that we're increasing our membership and getting more people out there. You know, there's an estimated 53,000 blind and visually impaired people in Alberta, according to the CNIB statistics, and so making sure that we're drawing those people out and getting them involved and increasing their quality of life is very important.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
For sure. Yeah.
Whenever I hear about blind sports, particularly goalball, I'm often very, very impressed. Not just by the fact that these athletes are out there doing what they love to do and putting on a great game, but because of something like goalball, which is just for those with vision impairments. It's something all their own. It's adding to the greater disability culture the idea that individuals with disabilities can not only participate in what the able-bodied would, but they can create for themselves as well. They can have something all their own, something unique. And if experience has taught us anything about disability athletes, something It's high performance, something with a lot of energy. And for the athletes themselves, something freeing. Because when you're out there engaging in your game, you're not thinking about what might hold you back. You're just being a part of the moment. You're just enjoying something that you love to do, which is the same with any athlete. For the truth is, any person with a disability can, in fact, for 9 out of 10 sports, they can find an adaptation that would allow them to play. But goalball is unique. It's something invented for people with disabilities, and it's not something that can be claimed by anyone who wouldn't understand or be on an equal playing field. And that's what keeps the game in checks and balances, because the ability levels out there, they're comparable. It's not about giving anyone an unfair advantage. It is about enjoying a sporting event with your fellows and just having a good game. It's good exercise, fosters a sense of community, and in this case, yes, it adds to the greater disability culture. It's something unique, something that could stand a little more publicity, in my opinion, but, well, hopefully, as we as a society progress, we can understand more and more that disability athletics and recreation, it's not about fulfilling an obligation, tossing a turkey bone for things like the Special Olympics, the Paralympics. Day to day, week to week, these athletes are out there doing what they love to do, doing what they're good at. And hopefully, as we progress as a more inclusive, more accessible society, we can take greater note of that. That it's not about giving one person an advantage over others. It's about equal abilities, equal energy, and just a great game. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Attention CJAM listeners. On Saturday, June 17th, starting at 6 a.m., CJAM will be going off the air for scheduled power maintenance by the University of Windsor. We will resume programming at 6 p.m. That's Saturday, June 17th, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. CJAM will be off the air. Thank you for your continued support and for listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Philip Schumann from ASRAB. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Kristen Schramer. We'll be sharing her insights about Turner syndrome. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with Turner syndrome.
Oh, wow. So my story is, I would say, not necessarily completely unique than many other young women with Turner syndrome. So nearly half of women with Turner syndrome are not actually diagnosed until adolescence. And so that was my experience. I actually was not diagnosed until I was 16. I had gone through a number of different health problems as I grew up that were actually related to Turner syndrome, but we didn't know that until it was actually my mom prompted my pediatrician at one of my physicals to look into a little bit about essentially why I wasn't necessarily, progressing through puberty. And, you know, after, you know, kind of giving it some thought, the doctor got back to us and indicated that she wanted to draw some blood for a karyotype. And that is how my initial diagnosis occurred, was actually through kind of my mom prompting and speaking with my pediatrician, kind of just having a feeling that there was something more going on with me than just the health problems that I had grown up with. And so I was very lucky in terms of after the diagnosis, I had an uncle that worked up at the Mayo Clinic. And so he immediately kind of rushed us up there to kind of get more information about what Turner syndrome is so I could talk with a geneticist. But also Turner syndrome can influence a variety of aspects within the body. So it can influence things like the development of kidneys. There are a number of congenital heart defects also that are commonly associated with Turner syndrome. So we kind of wanted me to kind of get checked over from head to toe. So we went up to the Mayo Clinic and received wonderful care there and got just a wealth of information that was, I think, really helpful for me and my family and my friends for understanding what this diagnosis was going to mean for me in the future. And so we went up there, we got my diagnosis, and I think we did find out that I had another underlying health condition that we were unaware of. So I do have a bicuspid aortic valve and an aortic dilation, which I do have to keep track of, that we were not aware of until I was diagnosed with Turner syndrome. So that was very scary. But I think one of the things that was harder for me, and I really had to think about, and I know, I believe Shan kind of touched on this as well with your interview with her, was this: what did this mean for me in terms of my ability to go on to have a family? And how is my inability to have children, how is that going to influence my romantic relationship? So I think that for me was one of the things that I had to very much think about and was one of my biggest struggles, I think, with my diagnosis, because I was used to a lot of the health components because I'd been exposed to that from a very young age. But this was the first time that I had ever had to kind of think about what is it going to mean for me not being able to have my own children, and what is this going to mean for my partner who I get involved with, you know. And so I think that was definitely the hardest part for me in terms of kind of my story with Turner syndrome.
So how did you go about coping with the diagnosis? What kept you strong?
Family, actually. So it was really wonderful conversations with my mom, who talked with me about the fact that just because I wasn't going to be able to have my own biological children, that didn't mean that I couldn't be a mother. And also reminding me that I'd always planned to adopt children. And I'd always wanted to have one of my own and then adopt others and bring them into my family. And so I think that really helped, was her pointing out that I could still have these experiences. Yes, they were going to be a little bit different, but I still was going to be able to be a mom and a great mom, and that, you know, I was going to be able to give some children a wonderful home. And then I think the other component in terms of the health component was just getting a really great team together to help me with especially like the new diagnosis of the heart condition that I have, just surrounding myself by a really, really great medical team that was well integrated and could treat me very holistically and was very concerned with treating me holistically.
So what have you found in terms of community supports?
So community supports, I think, is very important for especially young women who have Turner syndrome and young girls and especially families who have just maybe received this diagnosis and are kind of at a loss, you know, for what does this mean, you know, for either themselves or their daughters. Because this is, you know, a very rare condition, and so there's not a lot of, I think, awareness, especially outside of the medical community, about what does this mean. And so I do think that support groups such as the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada and the Turner Syndrome Society of the United States are godsends. They are wonderful because they allow for people to connect in a variety of ways through things like discussion boards, annual conferences that they hold each year where people can actually go and meet other individuals who have Turner syndrome and talk to them and hear their stories and their experiences. And they also have so many wonderful medical resources as well that they make available. So if you're just beginning with trying to understand this diagnosis, they have wonderful resources that can, I think, help and resources that aren't, I think, that very much go against the use of a lot of medical lingo. And so they put it in a way that is understandable to, they produce these materials in a way so that's understandable to the general public. So you can really begin to understand this diagnosis and what it's going to mean for you or your child. And it's wonderful for building connections. When you go to the conferences, everybody's just so warm and welcoming that even if you're a first timer, you don't feel like it. And every time I've now been to the U.S. conference, 5 times. And every time I go, it's almost like a family reunion because you see a lot of the same faces, you see some new faces, and you can connect and really, and even maintain those connections long after the conferences. Many women exchange information, they become Facebook friends. And so you can really form very strong bonds that I think is very important. I think especially in particular with Turner syndrome being such a rare diagnosis that many people don't even meet another individual with Turner syndrome until either they're much older or unless they attend one of these conferences. I know that was my experience. I had never met anybody knowingly who had Turner syndrome until I went to my first conference a few years back.
So, in terms of awareness, if you could send any one message to the community about Turner syndrome and what it really means, what would you say?
Oh, good question. I think what I would say is that Turner syndrome is a diagnosis, but it doesn't mean the end. I think a lot of people get very scared when they initially get that diagnosis, either as a parent or as a child. And so what I want to make people aware of is that, yes, there are going to be challenges, right? There are many health issues that are linked with Turner syndrome. Not being able to have your own children, may influence in terms of maybe one's confidence in getting in romantic relationships. Or, may lead to some difficulties in forming romantic relationships with individuals that want to have their own biological children, but that it's not the end and that there are so many wonderful women out there that I know that are so successful and have really succeeded. And so don't let this diagnosis hold you back. Reach for the stars. You can do it. And I think that would be one of the big things I would say is don't let this hold you back from doing what you want to do.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
You know, folks, I'm very glad Kristen brought up the idea about romantic relationships. Truth of the matter is, there's no simple definition of love. Regardless of how a person moves, speaks, thinks, what have you, we all have that basic need for companionship, to be loved and accepted for who and what we are. Too often in disability life, you hear the words, "I can accept you," that only lasts to a point, and then just ends in tragedy. But when it's real, when you find someone who accepts and cares about you as a person beyond just a condition, then you know it is something meaningful. Fact is, every person with a disability is looking for exactly the same thing in this sense. We're all looking for that special someone. And the truth is, having a disability can, at times, make things a little more difficult. But I would say to anybody out there who's asking those questions, am I worthy of being loved? Am I worthy of being accepted? The answer is an unqualified yes. Every person in this world, regardless of what they've done, what conditions they may have, what makes them special, they still have the potential to feel love and to feel loved. That's why this was such a hallmark thing she mentioned, because too often a person with any disability can come to that place where they say, my life is over. No one will ever accept or appreciate me in this sense. Kristen's story refutes this. Truth is, if you can live, if you can breathe, if you have anything to contribute in this world, as every person, without exception, does, then yes, you can be loved. And yes, there is something worth it in you. The first step is understanding that for yourself. It's understanding the idea that no matter what your condition is, your life's not over. As long as you continue to thrive and to rail against the hard times, you will grow stronger. You will find a way. It's human nature to not accept that which is unacceptable. For a person affected with Turner syndrome, I as a man can only imagine what that's like, but it's got to be fairly impacting. Standpoint of might come across as list of all the things you can't do. But as I've maintained so very many times, disability life is not about what you can't do. It's about finding new ways of doing what you can. And that was something Kristen touched on very deeply. Truth of the matter is, you just have to think creatively in disability life. You can say, I might not be able to do things this way, but maybe I can do things that way. And yes, there are those with any disability who beat the odds. There are, I think it was 1%, she said, of women affected with Turner syndrome who do have biological children. You never know who's going to beat the odds. But the fact is, that shouldn't be the deal breaker in any relationship or in anyone's perception of self. Shouldn't be a matter of, oh, I can't do this one thing exactly the way somebody wants me to do it, so I must be useless as a person. That is an illusion that defies explanation. No person is without value, no matter how they move or think or speak. None of it defines what a person's potential is. The only thing that can really define it is what a person is willing to take on. Are they willing to rise to a challenge and to say, I'm going to find a way to do what I want to do? Or do they recoil and say, my disability is responsible for all the world's woes? In some cases, it may hold a person back. That's very true. But it's a question of, do we live with those bonds? We live with the idea that this isn't going to happen, or do we find a new way to make it happen? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.